Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
Before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning. Welcome morning. To the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there and also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. It is bank holiday weekend, can you believe? The last bank holiday of the year before Christmas. Yikes. So it's Saturday the 23rd of August 2025 if you're listening on catch up. You've got Julian Paul here live as usual in the studio. Later in the show, we'll be talking to our PG. Our guest speaker this week and indeed every fourth Saturday of the month is Chris Dale, and he's going to be talking about turbulence. Very interesting stuff.
Just what you need to know when you go on holiday.
Well, it is. And indeed next week, whenever there are five Saturdays in the month, all being well, it will be Phil Muffett from the Mexburg and Swinton Astronomical Society. And on that note, a reminder of something happening tomorrow afternoon.
Yes, it's at the RSPB Old Moor site. That's with the MSAS Solar Sunday. That's the Mexburg and Swinton Astronomical Society. And that's this Sunday, 25th of August, between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. And it's a free event in the courtyard, but reserve charges still apply. MSAS will have telescope equipment to allow you to view the sun safely, and this is a great opportunity to hear from the experts how the sun is not just a terrestrial body that warms the planet, but supports all life on Earth. The sun is the nuclear engine of our solar system, so you may even see evidence of solar flares, which are huge magnetic bursts of energy shooting into space.
All good stuff, and I believe that's one of their last solar Sundays of the year, because, well, things are moving into autumn, aren't they, and all that. Anyway, elsewhere in the science news this week, lots of interesting stuff. First up, vaccinations in the developing world. At least 327,000 lives have been saved in the developing world since 2000, thanks to vaccine programs deployed to tackle outbreaks of measles, Ebola, yellow fever, cholera and meningitis. And that's according to a report in the British Medical Journal. The death prevention rate of 58% across all five diseases brought an estimated economic benefit of £24 billion to the 49 countries studied. Very interesting one. Next up, Paul.
Yes. Mapping out a different reality. So, on classroom walls, the standardised world map shows a shrunken Africa. Now African campaigners want it replaced because they say the nearly 500-year-old Mercator projection, that's M-E-R-C-A-T-R, distorts geography by diminishing the world's second largest continent, exaggerating the size of the Northern Hemisphere.
I find that a very interesting one, particularly being a sailor and charts, you'll see how Mercator projection works. It's how to flatten a round surface,
it's
basically.
It's taken you lots and longs, isn't it?
But I thought that was a great story. Very interesting. Let's see what happens with that one. Elsewhere in the news, wildfires have continued to rage in northwest Spain this week, with more than 20 active fires in the region, 10 of which were at the highest level of severity. Not good. I mean, I think last week I read a lot of French vineyards have been burnt to the ground, and that flavour of smoke will remain in the soil for many years, or the terroir, or, you know, what makes the wine. So it's a big, big problem.
Yes, and still on that sort of subject, summer set to break records. The long, hot summer of 2025 is likely to break records, although the highest UK temperature, which was 40.3°C, setting Coningsby, Lincolnshire, in July 2022, will probably not be reached. Data suggests this year is on track to be the sunniest, driest and consistently warmest so far recorded in Britain.
Yeah, interesting stuff, eh? Thousands more waterways are being used for recreation in England than previously recorded, according to new data, which campaigners hope will increase pressure on water companies to act on pollution. Danny Jordan, the director of campaigns and communities at Surfers Against Sewage, said England's wild waters are alive with swimmers, surfers, sailors and paddlers all year round, but the rules meant to protect them are stuck in the past.
Ooh. And finally, well, not finally, but a new poll by YouGov has confirmed that there is overwhelming support among the British public for the expansion of renewable energy, with 8 in 10 people in support.
And this is a great story I picked up in the press last week, I think. Ecofirm draws plan for paper paint pots. So it started by making the world's first paper bottles for wine and spirits, and now Frugal Pack is moving on to the paper paint pot. The company, which has sold about 3 million paper bottles used in 27 countries across 50 wine and spirit brands such as Silent Pool and Bonnie Doon, is plotting a multi-million pound expansion to reduce carbon emissions. Its bottles, which are made from 94% recycled paper and are 5 times lighter than glass, are stocked in retailers including Sainsbury's, Aldi, Lathwaite's, Ocado and Whole Foods Market. Malcolm Waugh, who's the Frugal Pack's chief executive, said about paper bottles, "Our mission is simple. We're offering a scalable alternative to glass that reduces emissions, supports circularity and is already being embraced by the drinks industry. Frugal Pack now hopes to tackle wasteful packaging. Paint cans are typically made from metal or plastic and can be very tricky to recycle because the paint left inside can be hazardous. The paper paint pots, paint pot is in the early stages of development. Frugal Pack wants to raise £5 million through a crowdfunding campaign and has struck a deal with a large paint supplier, which it refused to name at this point in time, to bring a lightweight, recyclable paper board pot to the market. Of the £5 million target, Frugal Pack has already secured £1 million in funding from the public through a Crowdcube campaign where investors contribute online. Frugal Pack, the company, is based in Ipswich, won the King's Award for Enterprise last year and was named SME or Small to Medium Sized Enterprise of the Year in the UK Green Business Awards. Cracking news, eh?
With so many fools playing to roles, trying to impress but feeling rather empty. I had another drink.
Cracking track there.
Oh, yes.
Pink Floyd with Paintbox, 1967. Yikes. We played that because we're talking, amongst other things, about Frugal Pack trying to develop paper paint pots. All exciting stuff. You're, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 until 12. We should have RPG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Good morning. You sound a little bit croaky.
Yes.
Oh dear, on this bank holiday, August bank holiday weekend, can you believe it's the last one before Christmas and the kids will be back at school next week? Yeah, well, not next week after, isn't it?
Yeah, like they say, tempus fugit. Time flies.
It does indeed. Ooh, hey, get you. So what's caught your eye in the science news this week then, Paul?
Well, you mentioned about local approaches to clean energy, and the University of Sheffield is going to be a key host in South Yorkshire for a landmark national summit to drive clean energy superpower ambitions. It's on the 11th to 12th of September. It's going to be out at Magna, and it's a get together from University of Sheffield, the Advanced Manufacturing Research Centre, Catapult, and South Yorkshire. It's the UK Clean Energy Summit 2025. And it'll convene with leaders from industry, policy and academia in South Yorkshire on September the 12th to accelerate the nation's clean energy transition and stimulate economic growth.
This is all good stuff. It's nice to hear about, you know, the AMRC, Advanced Manufacturing Research Centre, because, you know, they do a lot with the Tech College in Sheffield as well, bringing through. You know, the universities are very good, aren't they, now? With I suppose it's real life, isn't it? Taking the research and making it real into something real.
Absolutely. Well, it's a free to go to, and you're going to get Ruth Todd speaking, who's an operation and supply chain director at Rolls-Royce small nuclear reactor project.
Oh yes.
Tom Greatrix, who's the chief executive of Nuclear Industry Association and a former shadow energy secretary. Rob Gilbert, Director of Supply Chains at Great British Energy. Steve Foxley, who's Chief Executive of the Offshore Renewables Energy Catapult. Mark Stolz, who's the Regional Lead for Sustainability Engagement for Boeing. And Oliver Coppard, our South Yorkshire Mayor.
I say.
So they're going to be looking at small modular reactors, sustainable aviation fuels, industrial decarbonisation, the hydrogen supply chain and offshore wind.
Whoa.
So, great to see him getting involved at that sort of level and advancing, hopefully, clean energy.
Well, it's great for the region, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's good to see the University of Sheffield getting involved at that kind of level. And not the only thing they've done, they've also collaborated in developing new scanners to boost Sheffield's world-leading neuroscience research and transform patient care. So, busy time at Sheffield's University.
And very soon there'll be some new people coming along, probably for the first year as well.
Yeah,
freshers start mid-September, don't they? They come generally earlier than everybody else, because we noticed it has been quite quiet in the city centre because the students are off. But cracking stuff. It's the future, isn't it?
It certainly is. And one of the fears for the future has got a local connection as well. So local musician Emily Portman was surprised to get a message from one of her fans saying how wonderful her new album was. So she got this message and she was a bit puzzled because she hadn't done a new album. She didn't recognise it because she hadn't released an album. So she clicked through it and discovered there was an album online everywhere on Spotify, iTunes and all the online platforms. It had been called Orca. And it was music that was evidently generated by artificial intelligence, but was clearly very cleverly trained. And Emily thinks it was trained on her sort of background and music. So it had produced 10 tracks, and it used names like Sprig of Time, Silent Hearth, which she says are uncannily close to titles she might choose. But it's something that she actually won a Folk Award in BBC Folk Award in 2013. But this she found pretty creepy. So she listened to her voice and said it was a bit off, but sang in a folk style, which was kind of similar to hers, that AI obviously had produced. So not only that, the online album had got a cover design on there, and they're saying that now it's becoming a growing trend for established, though not high superstar level artists, to be targeted with these kind of fake albums and songs.
Blimey.
So, and even dead musicians have had AI generated new material added to their catalogues. So,
how bizarre is that?
Yeah.
So what did she think about this then? Not very happy, presumably.
Well, yeah, she said she didn't know who put the album up under her name. She was falsely credited as performer, writer and copyright holder. and a producer was listed in credits with the name of Freddie Howells, but she says that doesn't mean anything to her, and there's no trace of that kind of name online as a producer or musician. So as for the music herself, so although it was enough to convince some fans, she said it lacked the actual human creative input, which made it sound vacuous and pristine. And she said, I'm never able to sing that perfectly in tune. And that's not the point. I don't want to. I'm human. So
interesting. It's more, I think, one of the interesting things is the fact that who's benefiting from doing that? Who are they making, whoever's done it, are they making money out of it?
Well, because she sort of caught this early, she said it took Spotify the longest time to respond. I think it took them 3 weeks to take it down because it was obviously pretending to be her.
Yeah.
And got that, but she said that whoever posted the albums online will receive any royalties, but no song on Orca has had more than 2,000 plays on Spotify, so the revenue wouldn't have exceeded $6. Or £4.40 per track.
But it's a thin end of the wedge, isn't it?
Well, industry analysts called Luminate say that there are about 99,000 songs are uploaded to streaming services every day via dozens of distribution services, and they are supposed to inquire with the uploader submitting the artist's details. But they say if that information is incorrect or the song wrongly gets listed under an existing artist's name, it's down to the artist or their label to complain and get it removed. Yeah, so not very good, but also Emily, then there was a New York-based musician, producer and songwriter, Josh Kaufman, who played on Taylor Swift's Folklore album. Was also alerted to fake new material by his listeners. They started getting messages from fans and friends about some new music he just released, which was nothing to do with him. So his identity had been used to release a track called Someone Who's Loved Me, and it sounded like a Casio keyboard demo with broken English lyrics. very embarrassing and just kind of confusing. And he's one of a number of Americana and folk rock artists who have had fake tracks posted using their names in recent weeks, apparently all from the same source.
Ooh, interesting.
There's been spoofs of Wilco, who's the frontman, Wilco's frontman, Jeff Tweedy, Jay Tillman, also known as Father John Misty, Sam Beam, who's from Iron and Wine, and Teddy Thompson, Jacob Dylan, and all the releases use the same style of artificial intelligence artwork and were credited to 3 record labels, 2 with apparently Indonesian names, and many listed the same name as the songwriter, Zion Malik Mahardika.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah, so it's very worrying for musicians, I think.
And, it's not just musicians. I read the other day, somebody's been interviewed in a newspaper, and mm-hmm. they just said, asked why they were sat there, just said to AI, could you write a short story in the style of this author?
Yeah.
And it did. And I can't remember what her name was. She was absolutely stunned.
Well,
she said that could be written by, I could have written that.
Yeah, well, one of my favourite comedians is complaining that he's been impersonated by artificial intelligence, and that's Billy Connolly.
Is it?
Yeah, so usually what they're saying on the music scene is they're targeting people who aren't in the highest level because they tend to have got protection and support. So it's the sort of next level with working artists, and it seems to be increasingly a problem. So I found that, we talked about what the good sides of artificial intelligence could be. But that's one of the downsides, certainly for the creative community. So I found that one very interesting, I think. And then I did a bit of a follow-up on what I was talking about last week on rare earth minerals. And quite surprising, really. There's several sort of lines of research in America to say that America is actually producing the raw materials for sufficient rare earths to supply their own demand, but it's actually been put into waste tips, and it's a byproduct of things like mining for zinc or gold, and this stuff's going into they call it the tail of mines, and it's actually the equivalent here of the coal slag heaps that built up around the country when we were mining coal. So lots of this research said that if they could but actually process this mountain of waste, that they could produce all the rare earth materials that currently they're tending to import and for their future demands.
So they're thinking to the future to be self-sufficient, I guess.
Well, the problem is, and they're doing some research now on things like bio-leaching, which is to use a biological component to extract the materials. So quite often it's something like an algae. They immerse the material in water and put in a growth like an algae. And that extracts the minerals into an easier form to be sort of amalgamated and produced to the correct sort of style that's required. But it's this thing, you know, I did mention that it's one of the most abundant sort of resources in the Earth's mantle is the rare earth. So it's not that they aren't there, it's just that they're very difficult to extract. And China's pursued a policy of developing that extraction process, and one of the problems, one of the reasons why they say America's not developed it is because of the problems of contamination through the process, and the actual sort of energy costs potentially of extraction. So it's been easier to import it and let somebody else have that, kind of a bit of an inverse of plastic waste, where it's been easier to ship great container loads of plastic waste out to some other country, so you don't have a waste plastic problem as apparent in your own area.
No, but it's just bad news for the world in general, isn't it, if it just goes somewhere else?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of a real sort of problem. Is offshoring. We've talked about offshoring manufacture, and now that's part of the supposed plan for the American administration is to get industrial production back into the homeland, into the base. I think it's very difficult to sort of see how they're going to make this shift, but if the pressure was on, I'm sure that there would be an accelerated sort of development of this extraction process and processing. So quite interesting spread on that one, I think, from what we were talking about last week.
Yeah, well, as we said, I think China's got a lot of the rare earth metals, hasn't it? It's predominantly...
Well, it's done that's the thing. It's done the sort of processing to get that from a large amount of material. So there's a lot of processing, but it's actually set up this big processing thing. there are byproducts and there's waste from that and the cost of extraction. But they've seen the potential for worldwide demand of it, and they've actually built a system to cope with it.
Yeah, reading between the lines, it's about self-sufficiency, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, America doesn't want to have to rely on probably importing because then that's a, it's a lever, isn't it? As are all things, you know, you want your own, you want to be happy that you can build your own mobile phones and you don't have to go anywhere else to get the bits.
Yeah, I'll say it's very interesting. I think I'm probably just for a last thing before disappear and croak somewhere.
Oh, dear. Oh, Paul.
Looking at the news, and we talked about the UK Space Agency before and what a contributor that the overall sort of area is. And part of the government's sort of push to reduce cost of bureaucracy, they're actually going to absorb it into the Department of Science, Innovation and Technology in April next year. So they say it's going to save money, cut duplication and ensure ministerial oversight. But some of the leading proponents of space science have said the move could lead to a disruption in the short term and the UK losing ground in its international as international competitors take over. So it's around the world, countries have been recognising how important space is and developing national space agencies, but we seem to be taking a step backwards by scrapping ours. And we excel in the development of small spacecraft, satellites and space instrumentation. It's a role, and I think it's worth something like £18.5 billion a year and employs over 55,000 people across the country.
Wow.
So hopefully we can see the thing, but it is a bit of a balancing act, and sort of scrapping this, they think it may cause it to lose direction somewhat.
Well, watch this space, eh? And people said there's no money. I mean, £18 billion pounds.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, I think it's one of those unsung sectors that quite often we oversee because we haven't got the launch vehicles yet. I mean, we've had sort of famous failures like the Virgin Galactic launch system that didn't work for us. Quite often it's focused around the big nations who can launch spacecraft. So you've got sort of USA, India, China and Russia. Europe have got a toehold still with the ESA, European Space Agency, launching rockets from Africa.
Interesting. And the piece of music you've chosen is, Paul, Welcome. Well, we chose it and you weren't cracking.
Yep.
Welcome to the Machine, another bit of Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
What can we say? I know. Bye-bye, Paul. Speak to you Monday, Glory's Rock Show, 1 till 3. Bye.
Look forward to it. Cheers. Bye. We'll be right back.
Another fantastic track from Pink Floyd there.
Oh, yes.
Welcome to the Machine, amazing stuff. And we played that because RPG was talking about, amongst other things, Emily Portman, a Sheffield musician, who suddenly found out somebody had released an album in her name on social media and the downloading platforms, and it was generated by artificial intelligence. Woo. Anyway, you're of course listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday from 11 till 12. We should have Chris Dale on the line to talk about turbulence. Was a bit of Flying by the Beatles, can you believe, to bring our Chris in. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Life Science.
Good morning. You're sounding loud and clear. I believe you've got your headphones on, Chris.
I have, yes.
Excellent.
And just to say, get well soon, PG. He didn't sound well, did he?
I know. He's not being well, poor lad. But so we thought he got better, but you know it is. But Chris, today you're going to talk about turbulence.
Yeah, and why turbulence is becoming more frequent and more severe.
Yeah, so, it's not good news if you're a flyer.
Well, I just thought, given that everybody will be coming back from summer holidays, I thought it'd be an excellent time to talk about it.
So, indeed.
So, what is turbulence? Well, severe turbulence is defined as when the up and down movements of a plane going through disturbed air exerts more than 1.5 G force on your body. And that's enough to lift you out of your seat if you weren't wearing a seatbelt. Estimates show there are around 5,000 incidents of severe or greater turbulence every year out of a total of more than 35 million flights that now take off globally. So it's still a relatively small event. Of the severe injuries to passengers flying throughout 2023, almost 40% were caused by turbulence, according to the annual safety report by the International Civil Aviation Organization. So there you go.
Yeah, interesting.
So, I thought I'd give you an example. There was a project manager who was flying to New Zealand, and this is a case study that was done by the BBC. It was called Andrew Davis, and he was going to work on a Doctor Who exhibition. And the first leg of his flight was from London to Singapore, and that was lovely and smooth. But unfortunately, on the second leg, as they were going to New Zealand, the plane hit severe turbulence. And this is what Andrew said. He said, "Being on a roller coaster is the only way I can describe it. After being pushed into my seat really hard, we suddenly dropped. My iPad hit me on the head. Coffee went all over me. There was devastation in the cabin with people and debris everywhere. People were crying, and there was just disbelief about what had happened."
So he said he was a lucky one because other passengers were left with gashes, broken bones, and very, very sadly, a gentleman of the age of 73 died of a heart attack.
Ooh.
So death as a consequence of turbulence is very rare.
There are no official figures, but they think that something in the order of there's been about four deaths linked to turbulence sort of in the last sort of 40 years, something like that. But in terms of injuries, there's been a great deal more.
Mm.
I don't know whether you've ever been on a plane that's hit turbulence. I've only ever had minor turbulence.
Yeah, we have, but not to the point that we felt frightened, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, me neither. But from what I've heard from other people, when it happens, it can be absolutely terrifying.
Because you're out of control up there. You can't just go, I want to get off.
No, you can't.
So in the United States of America, there's been about 207 severe injuries where an individual has been
admitted to hospital for more than 48 hours since 2009. And official figures, and again from the National Transport Safety Board, say that around 166 of those were crew members because they were probably not seated at the time.
Ah, yeah, I see.
So
sometimes, Chris, you're dropping in and out of your signal isn't as clear.
Right.
So I'll go on, carry on, and I'll tell you if you sound really bright.
Well, you
sound, quite quiet now.
Right, you sound crystal clear to me.
Do I?
Yeah. Okay, shall I talk a bit louder?
No, that's worse. The beauty of live radio, eh?
Okay. So, as climate changes shift atmospheric conditions, experts warn that air travel could become bumpier. Temperature changes and shifting wind patterns in the upper atmosphere are expected to increase the frequency and intensity of severe turbulence. So according to a leading professor from the University of Reading, he said we can expect a doubling or tripling in the amount of severe turbulence around the world in the next few decades. So he says for every 10 minutes of turbulence experienced now, that could increase to 20 or 30 minutes in the next 10 years.
Gosh.
So the route that quite often a lot of people in the UK take is between England, the UK, Canada and the Caribbean. And this has become one of the areas that has been really affected. So in the last 40 years and since satellites began observing the atmosphere, there's been a 55% increase in severe turbulence in the Atlantic, which is quite astonishing, really. There are three main causes of turbulence. There's convective, which is caused by clouds or thunderstorms. There's orographic, which is airflow around mountainous areas. And there's clear air, which is changes in wind direction or speed. And each of these types can bring severe turbulence. Avoiding turbulence producing storms can crowd airspaces as more planes are forced to change route, according to experts. And a US study said that for every 1% rise in global temperature, lightning strikes increase by 12%.
Do you want to move somewhere? Do you want to move round your room, Chris? You're very quiet. Sometimes you pop out really loud.
Well, I'm at the exact same space that I always
have. Really? Oh, must be something in the air. Every so often you're really, really clear.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I think we're plugged in okay. Don't worry about it. We just can't turn you up any louder on the desk, that's all.
Okay.
You'll have to shout.
I'll have to shout. The increase in turbulence could potentially bring more incidents of injury or possible death in most severe cases. And that more than a fifth of UK adults say they are scared of flying. According to a recent YouGov survey, the worsening turbulence could make journeys even more of a nightmare for people. Aircraft wings, however, are designed to fly through turbulence. So the wings are very strong, very flexible. And for example, in a 474 passenger aircraft under destructive testings, the wings are bent upwards by some 25 degrees before any damage is done. So actually the effect of turbulence on an aircraft is negligible.
Yeah, it's the people inside that we've got to worry about.
But there is a hidden cost to turbulence as well. Because when there is severe turbulence, then planes need to be checked when they land. And costs can range from something around 180 to 1.5 million per airline annually. So the costs of having to check and maintain aircraft after severe turbulence is quite significant. And climate change is the one factor in making turbulence work, increasing both storm-related and clear air turbulence. And diverting around turbulent-producing storms can have a wider impact. So people are having to change flight paths. They need to be in the air longer. And this is creating more carbon emissions and also increased costs because of the additional fuel that is used.
Yeah, and I guess all these get passed on in some form to the customer.
The customer always ends up paying in the end.
You sound brilliantly clear now, Chris.
Brilliant.
Excellent.
Okay.
Yes.
So nearly done. Forecasting turbulence has got better in recent years. And whilst it's not perfect, they reckon that they can correctly forecast about 75% of clear air turbulence. 20 years ago, it was more like 60%. And this figure is going up over time. Aircraft now have weather radar that will pick up storms before a flight, and most airlines will produce a flight plan that details areas of turbulence likely throughout the route based on computer modelling. It's not 100% accurate, but it gives a very good idea to try and make the ride as smooth as possible for passengers. But in conclusion, even if turbulence does get more frequent and more severe, experts argue it isn't a case to worry. It's nothing more than just a little bit more annoying. So it just might mean sitting down more with your seatbelt on. And even some airlines have stopped serving hot food and drinks on certain routes to protect passengers from being burnt.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. There's particular routes, isn't there? Particular parts of the world.
Yeah, well, the North Atlantic is definitely one, and around Australia is particularly bad as well.
But the thing is, generally, when you're doing those routes, you're in the air a long time anyway. So if you won't feel like you want to get off, you're going to feel even worse.
Well, I have to say, people saying, well, it's nothing more than an irritation. I don't think I'd want to go through severe turbulence.
No,
ever.
It's a terrible feeling. It's... It's that shuddering and movement, isn't it? And everything rattles and feels out of control.
Yeah, awful.
And then when you have to drop as well, that's generally oxygen related, isn't it? I thought you had a personal experience somewhere where your plane got diverted.
Yeah, we were flying back from Rome, and the airplane suddenly dropped, and the oxygen masks came out. And we got diverted to Nice where we had to make an emergency landing. It didn't feel like an emergency landing. And basically one of the service doors at the bottom of the plane had burst open, so it hadn't been closed properly. And that's what caused a loss of air pressure. So we were absolutely fine. But I can remember one member of the crew started crying because she was so scared. People started putting on their life belts because they thought we were in the process of crashing.
But
so
yeah,
it was a very, very scary experience. But that wasn't turbulence; that was something
different. Oh, was it? But it's still the same. It still instills the same panic. And I think if the cabin crew start panicking or looking upset, everybody else is going to think that, you know, they're trained, aren't they? But it's a natural instinct, isn't it? You're all on this plane. And something happens, and
it was pretty scary, and it's definitely something I would never want to go through again.
No, amazing, and it's a shame, Chris, now because you sound absolutely crystal clear. So, do you want to talk about all that again?
Yeah, I'll do it next month.
You'll have to do it again because it's a great story, and you've also chosen a fantastic track as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, it had to be this track, didn't it? It couldn't have been anything else.
Well, I know. I don't think we've ever played this, not on Soul Plus or anything. But thanks for joining us, Chris,
thank
as
you,
well.
Chris.
But yeah, come back and do it again. It's just a shame. We couldn't make you any louder than you were. So you just dipped in and out. We'll have to see what it sounds like on the podcast.
All right. Have a great weekend,
yes,
everyone.
Yes, you too. Thank you. Thanks, Chris, cheers, for joining us. Bye-bye. Bye.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me. Let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come on, fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near, you may hear all the angels cheer, because we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It is perfect for a flying honeymoon. They say, come fly with me, let's fly away. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so very near, you might even hear a whole gang of cheers, just because we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a cuckoo day. You just say those words and we'll take our birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's so perfect for a flying honeymoon. Oh, babe, come fly with me. Let's fly, let's fly. Don't tell your mama.
Cracking track, that. Come Fly With Me by Frank Sinatra, 1958. And we played that because Chris Dale was talking about turbulence, why playing turbulence is becoming more frequent and more severe. Just a bit of a shame, the reception wasn't that great. So Chris may come on next time when he's on and do that story again, because it was a cracking track. You're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We're every Saturday morning from 11 till 12 talking about science in all its different forms. Next up, I'm going to talk a little bit about what you eat and drink does to your health. We talked about this a while back. So I'm going to talk about, firstly, red meat. Interesting. There are several reasons that government guidelines recommend we eat no more than 70 grams a day or 490 grams a week of red meat. And that's the equivalent of one third of an 8-ounce steak or 5 tablespoons of beef mince. Heme, which is a red pigment found naturally in red meat, has been shown to damage bowel cells, and high intakes of it are listed by the IARC as a probable cause of bowel cancer. How you cook it can make matters worse as well, says Cancer Research UK, since the extreme heat of barbecuing, grilling or frying generates more damaging chemicals that are also linked to bowel cancer. Heterocyclic amines, for example, are formed when animal proteins are exposed to high eat, while polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons are formed when fat from meat drips onto a heated surface and burns, coating the meat with the smoke. In a recent Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology study of 2 million people, researchers from the University of Cambridge suggested that eating 100 grams of unprocessed red meat a day, which is equivalent to a small steak, was associated with a 10% higher risk of type 2 diabetes. Red meat also contains saturated animal fats. In a review of 13 studies involving more than 1.4 million people, scientists from the University of Oxford's Newfield Department of Population Health found that an intake of 50 grams or higher of unprocessed red meat a day increased the risk of heart disease by 9% over 30 years. Also, diets high in red meat are associated with approximately 900,000 deaths worldwide, according to a study from the Hazong University of Science and Technology. And another story sort of related to meat as well, processed meat in particular. If you haven't already reduced your intake of bacon, ham, salami and other processed meats, it's probably time you did.
We did.
In July, studies results of a study involving almost 130,000 participants concluded that eating 2 servings per week of processed red meat, such as bacon and sausages, raised the risk of dementia by 14% compared with those that ate less than 3 servings a month. Presenting to the Alzheimer's Association International Conference, the scientists also shared how swapping 1 serving of processed red meat for a serving of nuts, beans or tofu every day can lower the risk of dementia by 1/5. Processed meat is also categorised as a group 1 carcinogen, the same group as smoking and alcohol. Can you believe that? A study by Cancer Research UK scientists involving almost 500,000 UK adults found that those eating 79 grams red or processed meat a day, the equivalent of 3 slices of ham, had a 32% increased risk of bowel cancer compared with people eating less than 11 grams daily. Chemicals such as nitrates and nitrites, which are added during processing to keep meats fresher for longer, have been shown to damage cells in the bowel. In the Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology study at the University of Cambridge, researchers warned that eating 50 grams of processed meat a day, which is the equivalent of 2 slices of ham, presents a 15% higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes in the next 10 years. It follows a study published last year in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings that found too much salt present in high amounts in processed meats such as ham, salami and bacon. And that also raises the risk of type 2 diabetes. Cancer Research UK says the evidence is clear that eating less processed meat can help reduce the risk of bowel cancer, the 4th most common cancer in the UK. So that's enough, not enough to put you off eating processed meat, which is ham, sausages, bacon, things like that, and actually raw red meats. Then you really ought to do something about it and swap. You know, even small changes to your diet can make a massive difference. And on that note, we're going to play out with a very interesting track. It was one of our PG selections for Glory Days Rock Show way back in 2023. It's a band called The Legless Trials. But funnily enough, the track's called Red Meat. So here we go. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Small stuff at first, like microwave radiation causes autism on your grandchildren. Then it built up to every time you use shampoo, it gets inside your head and tells you what to do. Conspiracy got me a little worried about being free, about being me. Think of other people as pieces of meat.
society.